Hello, everyone. This is the Outreach with Reggie podcast, and I am your host, Reggie Holloway. If this is your first time here, hello. It's very nice to meet you, and thank you for choosing this podcast for your listening ears and hopefully a new perspective. And if you're returning back, welcome back. I hope you're somewhere safe with the people who you love and the ones that you cherish, holding them real tight, and finding peace and love in the little things. And today's episode is something good, something new. And as you listen to this episode, I hope it's able to provide a fresh new perspective, able to challenge you a little bit, but overall, something that you can use, share, and relate to. So with that being said, stay tuned for the Outreach with Reggie podcast. I want to talk to the people who still believe, but don't feel confident saying it out loud anymore. I want to talk to the people who pray, but only in their head, who still say God, but with hesitation, who still hope, but feel embarrassed that hope hasn't died yet. This episode is not for the people who have it all figured out. This episode is for the ones who used to be sure, for the ones who used to raise their hands without thinking, for the ones who used to quote scripture easily, for the ones who used to feel God everywhere and now feel him almost nowhere. If that is you, I want you to hear this clearly. You are not broken, you are not weak, and you are not alone. First and foremost, this is the first episode of 2026. And if you have made it 2026, if you have made it to 2026, I want to applaud you. I want to say I'm grateful that you have made it here. And I am happy to know that you're alive. Second, I want to set the tone for this episode. So right now, there is a quiet group of people no one talks about enough. They did not leave faith dramatically. They did not write a manifesto, a long paragraph out. They did not announce their exit. They just got quieter. They still believe something. They're just not sure exactly what that may be. They're faith adjacent, faith curious, faith tired, faith conflicted, faith exhausted, still reaching, but afraid of being disappointed again. And if you're listening to this episode, and if you feel like this relates to you, chances are you're somewhere in that space. And I want to be honest with you. There have been periods in my life where faith was easy, clear, confident, and structured. And then there were seasons where faith felt like work, like wrestling, like holding on with one hand and not necessarily sure what to do with the other. And what no one prepared me for was this. The moment where faith stops being inherited and it starts to be more chosen, choosing to have faith rather than feeling like you're grabbing for a glass ceiling. Because that could be the most painful part of belief, but also where you can find the most growth in, because certainty is comfortable, but honesty costs something. So I want to name the tension that presents itself right there. Here's the tension no one teaches us how to hold. You can love God and still feel that there's some form of disappointment. You can believe and still feel confused. You can be faithful and still ask questions that scare you. Some of you were taught that doubting is dangerous, that questions are rebellious, that silence means failure. But I want to suggest something radical today. What if doubt isn't the opposite of faith? What if apathy is? What if questioning isn't betrayal, but engagement? And to tap further into that, I want to talk about something called the unnamed fear. The fear isn't that God isn't real. We know God to be real and God to be true. The fear is, what if I believed this deeply and it still doesn't hold me? What if I prayed and nothing changed? What if I trusted and still lost? What if I stayed faithful and still felt so lonely? That fear will make anyone pull back. The fear that makes people say, oh, I'm just taking a break. Taking a break from all the old faith and all churchy and all spiritual stuff. I'm figuring things out. I don't know what to believe right now. But beneath that language is grief. Now you may ask, what grief are you talking about? And within the next thing I'll be talking about is the grief for the faith you used to have. No one tells you that you can grieve old faith. The faith that was simpler, the faith that didn't have trauma attached to it, the faith that didn't require disclaimers. Some of you miss believing without flinching. And instead of honoring that grief, you were told to pray harder, serve more, trust deeper. But grief doesn't respond to pressure. Grief needs space. So how do you channel that? How do you turn the engines for that? And it's how you understand and define and redefine your faith within the process. And here's a definition of faith that changed everything in my life. Or maybe look at it from a different perspective. And some things that I'm still learning right now. Faith is not certainty. Faith is not, I have it figured out. Faith is relationship. And every relationship has questions, tension, silence, growth, disappointment, and repair. Faith is building blocks. Knowing that it's for your good. In doing it. Because if your faith has never been tested, if you've never been challenged by your faith to have faith, if you've never been challenged, then you've never been tested. And if it's being tested right now, if your faith is being tested right now, that doesn't mean it's failing. That doesn't mean you're losing faith. It may mean that it's becoming real. And that's a beautiful thing. So if I'm allowed to talk to you, the viewer, directly for the moment, the listener. If you're listening to this while driving late at night, if you're sitting alone in your house, if you're currently feeling like the walls are getting heavy, silence is getting louder, if you're if you're choosing to avoid church, or wondering if you're still allowed to believe, I want you to hear this without shame. God is not intimidated by your honesty. He is not offended by your confusion, and he is not absent just because he is quiet, or you may feel he is quiet. So as we go into this episode further, this episode isn't about having the answers. It's about permission. Permission to question. Permission to feel conflicted. Permission to stay even without certainty. For this next part, in this next segment, we're going to talk about doubt, not as failure, but as a doorway, and why people who ask the hardest questions are often the ones with the deepest faith. So stay with me as we go further in. So I want to name something particular, and that is naming doubt without shame. So let's talk about doubt, honestly. And it's not the kind people joke about. And it's not the kind wrapped in ego and arrogance, but the quiet kind. The kind that shows up at night when we're alone. And it's the kind that shows up that tries to interrupt our prayers, intersect what's going on in our mind, and try to cause destruction in our hearts and our dreams. The kind that whispers, "What if this isn't what I thought it was?" Many of us were taught that doubt is dangerous, that doubt is the crack in faith, that doubt leads to destruction. But what if that's not completely true? What if doubt is not the collapse of faith, but the collapse of the illusion that many of us carried? The difference between doubt and deconstruction, because there's something important there. Doubt asks questions. Deconstruction examines foundations. Doubt says, "Why doesn't this make sense to me anymore?" Deconstruction says, "What parts of this were never solid to begin with?" And for a lot of people, those two things happen at the same time. You don't wake up one day wanting to deconstruct. You wake up one day realizing you can't ignore the questions anymore. So why does deconstruction happen? Let's name the common triggers if we can. Trauma being a big one. Church hurt being another one. Hypocrisy. Silence from God. Loss. Loss of loved ones, family members, or very big losses. Injustice. Being told, just pray when you need help. When you needed help. Seeing faith weaponized instead of lived. For many people, deconstruction isn't rebellion, it is survival. Which goes into the myth we were taught. And that is, strong faith has no questions. That idea collapses the moment you actually read scripture. Because the Bible is full of people who have questions and have very hard questions, because at that moment, they're experiencing things that go beyond their understanding. One of my favorite stories is the story of Job. He's lost his children and lost everything he could have ever had. And he asked, "Why was I born?" Jesus himself asked, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" along with many other great men in the Bible. And none of them were casted out for asking. They were recorded, preserved, honored. But what does that tell us exactly? Well, let me break down further the idea of doubt. Doubt is not absence. Doubt is tension. And tension is where growth happens. Like the old expression, you apply pressure to coal and make a diamond. Because that's tension there. Pressure and tension. Muscles grow under resistance. Relationships grow through conflict. Faith grows when it's tested, not protected. It's easy to believe in God when everything is great. But when God has you in a waiting season, or when God has you in a season where it challenges you to lean on Him, that's when your faith is tested, not protected, not when everything's easy. If your faith cannot survive questions, then it was never faith. It was compliance. So why do people feel guilty for questioning? Let's talk about that. Because it's a real thing. Many people feel like they're disappointing God, as being one of the leading factors, that they are betraying their community, that they're falling spiritually or failing spiritually, especially if you are praised for being strong in faith. The stronger you were seen, the harder it is to admit uncertainty. Because now your doubt feels like public failure. And that goes into what I like to call performative faith versus private faith. This is where things shift. Because there is a difference between faith you perform and the faith you live. Performative faith looks confident. Private faith often looks quiet, trembling, and honest. The deconstruction in that often begins when performance becomes exhausting. When you're tired of performing, like you're tired of performing, thinking that everything's fine or making it seem this way. Your chin's up in the sky. And to everyone else, you're like, man, I got it together. Yes. But at home, in a quiet space, you're crying your eyes out. At home, in private, you're broken down. And when pretending costs more than telling the truth, that, my friend, when it becomes unhealthy. So let me break down what deconstruction is not. Deconstruction is not hatred to God, nor is it a rejection of spirituality, a moral failure, an intellectual arrogance, going back to the ego I was meaning to talk about before. Deconstruction is often a grieving process, grieving certainty, being so certain of what you understand. Community, finding safe, peace in community, safety, identity, a sense of belonging. You don't just question beliefs, you question who you are without these beliefs, which furthers into the big identity crisis. Because when faith shifts, identity shakes. Because faith wasn't just something you believed, it was something you were. So when beliefs start unraveling, you ask, if this isn't true, then who am I? That question can feel very terrifying, but is also sacred because it forces honesty. It forces a conversation that you must have with God and with yourself. a deeper look within what you've been believing to be true and what you must confront. But silence, why silence makes it worse. Here's what deepens doubt for many people. Silence. You pray, you wait, you ask, and nothing answers back. And people tell you, God is always speaking, but your experience says otherwise. And now you just don't feel confused, you feel defective. Like you're missing something everyone else has, comparing your journey on along with everyone else's. So let's look at reframing silence. Let's talk about silence without spiritualizing it away. Silence hurts, if we're being honest with ourselves. Silence creates space for fear. Silence magnifies unanswered questions, but silence does not mean absence. Silence means God is not performing. God is not proving. God is not being used as reassurance. Sometimes silence strips faith down to honesty. And honesty is terrifying, but it is real. And it is needed. And here's the cost of staying honest, the hard truth, because few people know how to sit with uncertainty. You might lose community being honest. You might feel misunderstood. You might outgrow spaces that once felt like home. But growth often costs familiarity. Growth often costs comfortability. But growth is necessary. So I'm speaking to you, the person who's finding themselves deconstructing and analyzing the areas they feel uncertainty in. If you are deconstructing right now, hear me. You are not behind. You're not failing. You're not abandoning your faith. You are doing the work many people avoid. You're asking questions that lead to depth, not destruction, not quitting. You're looking at it from a deeper perspective. Because here's what comes after deconstruction. Deconstruction is not the end. It is a cleaning, a clearing. It removes what was cultural, coerced, that was fear-based, that was performative. So something truer can remain. Reconstruction may come later, or differently, or quietly, or may not look like what you expect it to be. And that is okay. So as we close part two of this segment, part two is the validation process. Doubt is not the enemy of faith. Fear is. And honesty, even when it hurts, honesty, is the most faithful thing you can offer, is to be honest, to thy own self be true. In this next part, we're going to talk about church hurt, the wounds that don't just challenge belief, but shatter trust, and how spiritual trauma complicates faith even further. So stay with me and hope that you haven't quite given up yet. In this particular part, we're going to be talking about church hurt. And I'm going to hit it directly by naming the wound. Because before we go any further, I need to say this clearly. Some of you did not lose faith because you stopped believing. You lost faith because something broke your trust. And that matters. Because when we talk about faith, feeling complicated. We cannot ignore the role church itself has played. So what is church hurt in reality? Let's define that plainly. Church hurt is not being offended, disagreeing with leadership. It is not liking a sermon. It's not liking a sermon. Church hurt is relational and spiritual harm that happens in a place that claimed to represent God. It's harm that happens in sacred places through spiritual language with moral authority under the banner of love or truth. And because it happens in the name of God, it cuts deeper. But why does church hurt? Why does it hit different? I laugh because I don't usually say hit different. That's a bit beyond my time. But when someone hurts you at work, you can quit. When someone hurts you in your family, it's complicated. But when someone hurts you in church, they didn't just touch your emotions. They touch your sense of God. They touch your safety, your identity, your sense of belonging, your understanding of what love looks like or what it's supposed to look like. And that's why church hurt lingers. And here's the common forms of church hurt. Some of you were hurt by leaders who abused their power. Silence around the abuse. Shame-based teaching. Being told your questions were sinful. Being excluded for who you are. Being used for your gifts and then discarded. Being told to pray harder instead of being helped. Watching injustice happen and watching injustice be ignored or justified. Others were hurt by hypocrisy, spiritual gaslighting, conditional love, fear-based theology, being made responsible for other people's faith. And some of you were hurt simply by realizing this place is not safe for me anymore. So what is spiritual gaslighting? Let's pause right there. Spiritual gaslighting sounds like you're too sensitive. That's not what happened. Surely not. You must have misunderstood that. That's not what that was. God is using this to humble you. If you were more faithful, this wouldn't hurt as much. Spiritual gaslighting makes you doubt your own reality in the name of God. And I will admit, before I realized that in some instances, I need to grow myself. I often said things that, you know, that would be considered too spiritually gaslight. But I thank God for allowing me to be checked and humbled about those things. Because that can create trauma for someone. So what does spiritual trauma do to the body? It can show up as anxiety around prayer, panic during worship, guilt for setting boundaries, fear of disappointing God, shame when questioning, numbness towards faith, avoidance of religious spaces, because your body remembers what your mind tries to explain away. And no amount of just have faith fixes trauma. So we go into the betrayal of trust. Church hurt often feels like betrayal because you trusted leaders, community, teachings, and systems. You believed people would protect you. And when they didn't, when they caused harm instead, it shattered something, not just belief, but trust. So ultimately, people leave. But why people leave and why people stay? Some people leave the church completely. That's just the truth. But some stay, but they detach emotionally. Some people keep believing, but never fully belong again. There is no right response to church hurt. Survival looks different for everyone. Because oftentimes enough, you all want to feel like you belong somewhere. But let's be honest about it. Belonging often comes with conditions, unspoken rules like don't question too much, don't disrupt the narrative, don't name harm publicly, don't challenge authority, don't bring your whole self. And when belonging requires silence, it becomes very dangerous. And that's when faith becomes performance again. Performance faith. For many people, church hurt leads back to performance. You show up, you smile, you serve, you nod, but inside, you're very guarded. Because once trust breaks, authenticity feels risky. So why people miss the church but not the system? Because as we explained, some people leave, some people stay. But when you miss the church but not the system, here is something that many people don't know how to say. I miss community, not control. I miss the connection, but not coercion. I miss meaning, but not manipulation. I miss God, not the institution. That grief is valid. So how do you reclaim your faith after church hurt? This part is particular. This part is really delicate. Because reclaiming faith does not mean returning to unsafe spaces, forgiving prematurely, rejoining systems that harmed you, ignoring red flags. Healing does not require reconciliation with institutions. Some healing means distance. Because you have permission to step back a bit. If you need to step back from church, hear this. Rest is not rebellion. Distance is not disobedience. Boundaries are not bitterness. Because silence can be sacred. So what does safe faith spaces look like? Safe spiritual spaces welcome questions, center consent, value humility, address harm honestly, protect the vulnerable. It allows disagreement, and it does not rush healing. If a space requires you to abandon yourself to belong, it is not holy. So I want to speak to the one that has been hurt. If church shattered your faith, hear me, you're not weak, you're not faithless, you're not traumatic, you were wounded in a place that was supposed to protect you. That matters. What to do with the anger that you have? Anger after church hurt is normal. Anger is not sin. It is information. It tells you a boundary was crossed, a value was violated, a trust was broken. You don't have to suppress the anger to be spiritual. You don't have to listen to it. And there is a thing that I want to call grief and faith. Many people don't realize church hurt creates grief. You grieve community, identity, purpose, certainty, spiritual safety. Grief takes time, and rushing it causes harm. So how do you reframe God after hurt? One of the hardest parts is separating God from the people who misrepresented God. And that takes time. And that's okay if you're not there yet. People who we believed to carry the what we call to be God-like, they may be your introduction to Christ. And along the way, they may do something that may be hurtful. And because they may have been their introduction to Christ, that may cause a sense of worry, anxiety, and pain. But you don't have to rush reconciliation with God to prove anything. And to close part three, if part one was permission to question, and part two was permission to doubt, then part three was permission to heal. You don't owe loyalty to systems that harmed you. You owe yourself honesty. In the next part, we'll talk about what faith can look like after certainty is gone. How people rebuild, redefine, or rediscover belief in quieter, truer ways. So stay with me. Stay with me. So here we are, after the collapse. After the collapse of the collusion, of the illusion. There's a moment after something collapses where the dust hasn't settled yet. You don't know what is still standing. You don't know what is safe to touch. You don't know what you believe anymore. You just know what you can't go back to. This is where many of you are. Not in disbelief. Not in rebellion, but in the quiet aftermath of certainty falling apart. And I want to say this before we go any further. This space, this in-between, it is not failure. It's formation. So the myth of reconstruction, because we talked about reconstruction a bit in this episode. Reconstruction faith is not finding better answers. It's not switching churches, replacing one theology with another overnight, becoming stronger than before. Reconstruction is slower than that, messier than that, more honest than that. It's not about certainty returning. It is about truth becoming gentle enough to live with. When certainty disappears, it becomes easier. For many people, certainty was the foundation. You were taught that God is clear, that faith is firm, truth is fixed, doubt is dangerous. So when certainty cracks, it feels like free falling. You ask, if I don't know for sure anymore, what do I have? The answer may surprise you. You may have humility. You have curiosity. You have integrity. You have room to breathe. I want to address this beautiful thing between quiet faith and loud faith. Faith. A lot of us were raised with loud faith. Faith that declares, proclaims, explains, corrects, defends. But after pain, faith often gets quieter. Quieter faith listens, observes, holds tension, asks better questions, and it makes space for mystery. Quiet faith is not weaker. It is more honest, if anything. So what's faith without guarantees? One of the hardest shifts is letting go of guarantees. Faith after certainty no longer promises, if you do this, God will do that. If you believe hard enough, things will work out. If you're faithful, you will be protected. Instead, faith becomes something like, I don't know what will happen, but I'm willing to stay present. And that kind of faith takes courage. And it requires you to redefine faith. But what was redefining faith even look like? Maybe faith is choosing compassion over cynicism, choosing honesty over performance, choosing love even when answers are unclear. Maybe faith isn't certain at all. Maybe faith is trusting in the next small step without having the answer right away. Spirituality without pressure. For some of you, faith is too loaded a word. It's too loaded of a word right now. And that's okay. Spirituality can exist without labels. It can look like sitting in silence, walking in nature, lighting a candle, journaling your questions and prayers, caring deeply about justice, choosing kindness. God doesn't disappear because your language changes. But where is God in this? You have to let God be bigger. Certainty often shrinks God. Feeling like you have the complete answer, or the right answer, or the correct answer, you have to let God be bigger than what your understanding is. Lean not on your own understanding, because certainty requires control. But mystery expands God. When you stop needing God to fit inside explanations, you allow God to be vast again. And vastness is terrifying, but it is also freeing. But what causes us to feel like we even need that form of control? That form of answers, that form of feeling like we got it? Because it is the fear of getting it wrong. Many people stay stuck because they're afraid. What if I believe the wrong thing? What if I mess this up? What if God is disappointing in me? Let me say this gently. If God is love, real love, then curiosity is not betrayal. Seeking is not rebellion. Honesty is not disobedience. Because faith is a relationship, not a contract. Some of us were taught faith like a contract. If I do X, God does Y. But relationships don't work like that. Healthy relationships allow questions, distance, silence, growth, and change. If faith is a relationship, it must be allowed to evolve. Learning to trust your inner voice. One of the most radical parts of reconstruction is learning to trust yourself again. After being told, don't trust your heart, don't trust your thoughts, don't trust your questions. Reconstruction says, what if your discernment matters? That's not arrogance, that's maturity. So what is the role of community after certainty? Well, you may not need community that agrees with you, You may need community that respects you, listens to you, doesn't rush you, doesn't fix you, but walks alongside you. Safe community does not demand answers. It honors the process. So let's talk about faith and justice. For many people, Reconstruction includes justice. You start asking, who benefits from this belief? Who gets harmed? Who gets excluded? Who gets silenced? Faith that cannot face injustice honestly. Sustained trust. And choosing justice does not mean abandoning faith. It may mean deepening it. After Reconstruction, faith becomes simpler. Not easier, but simpler. Less in doctrine, more presence. Less certainty, more compassion. Less fear, more love. But what if faith never returns the same? Here's the hard truth, and also a hopeful one. Faith may never look the way it used to. And that's okay. You're not meant to go backward. You're meant to grow forward. So, if you're listening and thinking, I don't know what to believe anymore, let me say this clearly. You don't need to figure out everything. You don't need to figure out everything. You don't need to have everything figured out to be worthy of love, meaning, or spiritual connection. You're allowed to be unfinished. And here's what hope without certainty looks like. Hope after certainty is quieter. It doesn't shout. It doesn't promise. It doesn't demand belief. It simply says, maybe something good is still possible. And sometimes, that's enough to keep going. And it's a blessing for the Reconstruction soul. If you are rebuilding slowly, carefully, honestly, may you trust your pace. May you honor your questions. May you release the need to be correct or right. And may you find peace without pressure. May you discover that faith can exist even here. This episode is not about having the answer. It's about permission. Permission to doubt. Permission to grieve. Permission to heal. Permission to rebuild. So, what comes after the questions? After everything happens, there is a moment after the doubt, the grief, the deconstruction, after the long nights of questioning, the long nights in prayer, when life quietly asks, all right, now what? Not in the demanding way, not in a shaming way, just gently. You don't have certainty anymore. You don't have the answers you once did. You might not even have the language you once believed of what you believed, but you're still here, breathing, living, showing up, and that matters. And the lie that requires certainty that we were once taught, a dangerous idea, that life only has meaning if we're sure about God. If we're sure about God. The truth or purpose. That without certainty, even everything falls apart. But look around. Some of the most meaningful lives are lived by people who admit, I don't know. Meaning does not require certainty. Meaning requires presence. But what if meaning is made, not found? For many of us, meaning used to be handed to us. Do this. Believe this. Live this way, and your life will matter. But when those frameworks fall apart, we panic. What gives my life meaning now? And here's a radical thought. What if meaning isn't about something you discover, but something you participate in creating through how you love, through how you show up, through how you care for others, and through how you care for yourself? Is living a good life without necessarily a roadmap? Some of you are grieving the loss of certainty because certainty gave you direction. It told you who you were, where you were going, what mattered, and what didn't. Now the map is gone. So now what? But that doesn't mean the journey is over. It means you're walking by values, not rules. And values that often remain after faith shifts. Even after belief changes, many values stay. Things like compassion, justice, honesty, humility, kindness, integrity, and love. Do you notice something? You don't need certainty to live these things out. You need courage and the difference between control and trust. Certainty often gave us control. We thought, if I believe in the right things, I'll be safe. But trust is different. Trust says, I don't know what's coming, but I will meet it honestly. Trust does not guarantee. Trust doesn't need guarantees. It needs grounding. So what does hope look like right now? Hope after certainty is quieter. It doesn't promise miracles. It doesn't claim everything happens for a reason. It does not rush pain. Hope sounds like, now, this hurts, and I'm still here. I don't know how this ends, but I'm willing to stay. Something meaningful can still exist even now. This kind of hope is fragile and deeply brave. Letting life be imperfect and meaningful. One of the hardest lessons is realizing life does not need to make sense to be worth living. You can grieve and still love, doubt and still care, question and still act, hurt and still heal. Wholeness does not mean certainty, it means integration. But for ones who believe in hope, it's like, but you have to be reasonable. For some people, fear was the motivator. Because you feared something, you're going to do everything in your mind to try to avoid what you fear. Fear of hell. Fear of punishment. Fear of getting it wrong. Fear of missing the mark. When fear disappears, you wonder, what keeps me good? If crime was legal, would you still do it? Would you still avoid it? I mean, if it was legal to steal, would you do it? What keeps you good? Here's the truth. Love is a strong motivator than fear ever was. You don't need threats to be kind. You don't need certainty to choose justice. You don't need rules to act with compassion. And there's something very important I want to tackle here too. When God becomes a question and not an answer. For some of you, God hasn't disappeared. God has changed shape. No longer a voice that explains everything. No longer a presence that controls outcomes, but maybe a mystery, a question, a sense of connection, a quiet presence, a love you cannot define. And that's okay. Faith does not require clarity. It requires, say it with me, honesty. the courage to stay soft. One of the risks of deconstruction is hardness. Bitterness, detachment. Staying soft is an act of resistance. To keep loving, to keep caring, to keep hoping without guarantees. And that's not naive. That is very brave. Because you are allowed to change again. When you land now, where you land now does not have to be permanent. You are allowed to change your beliefs, your language, your understanding, and your mind again. Growth is not betrayal, it is life. So, if you are scared without certainty in your life, if you're scared that without certainty, your life will fall apart, look at yourself. You are still here, still learning, still choosing kindness, still seeking meaning. You didn't lose yourself, you found yourself. And I'll even invite you and grant you permission to find meaning in the small things. Maybe meaning isn't cosmic. Maybe it's showing up for a friend, doing your work with care, creating something honest, sitting with someone in pain, choosing rest when you're tired, and speaking truth gently. These things matter. Even if the universe stays quiet, it's a quiet yes to life, because at some point, you may find yourself saying a quiet yes, not to certainty, not to answers, not to doctrine, but to life. Yes, I'm still here. Yes, I'll keep going. Yes, I'll love anyway. And yes, I'll choose meaning where I can. That yes is enough. So here's a final gentle reminder. Wherever you are on this journey, believing, questioning, unsure, or somewhere in between, may you feel permission to breathe. May you trust your pace. May you know you are not broken. And may you live gently with yourself. May you find meaning without pressure. May you discover life can be sacred, even when you're not certain anymore. So, as you are walking into a new year, and for most of you, you've made a lot of New Year's resolutions, promises, guarantees. Maybe you're going to go to the gym a little bit more this year. Do better financially. Pick up a new hobby, skill, trade. And for some of you, you don't know what you're going to do this year. You don't know how you're going to make it happen. I invite you to walk into this new year uncertain, not knowing how you're going to make it happen, but you know that it is possible, it's a reachable thing, and it's obtainable. So if this episode has spoken out to you in any way, I invite you to give yourself permission to believe again, to have faith again, to love again, to learn again. As I said before, you never stop being a student. There's plenty of life lessons, and although classrooms may look different, the curriculum stays the same. There's always room to grow, room to learn, and may you find beauty in learning these life lessons. So, share the podcast, share today's episode, share it with a friend, someone in need, or someone you truly care about. Rate the episode on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your episodes from. And tune in next time. My name is Reginald Holloway, but you can call me Reggie. We're family here. And this has been an episode of Outreach with Reggie. Take care and have a beautiful day.